Well, we are now diving into Ecclesiastes. We've gone through all of Proverbs in our Heartstrong, in our reading, and we're moving into Ecclesiastes. And it's a book on, it's a wisdom book. It fits within the structure of the wisdom books, and it's brilliant in what and how it teaches us, as long as you understand what it's teaching, right? Sometimes it can be hard to understand, and if you start, when you look at the start of Ecclesiastes, you'd be like, what is going on here? And if you know, you know, right? The book of Ecclesiastes, it's traditionally attributed to somebody called Qoheleth, or the preacher in English, which is likely Solomon, the son of King David. And it's a philosophical and theological reflection on the meaning of life in a fallen world, which he often refers to in the book as under the sun, everything under the sun, meaning on earth, the world that we live in versus the heavens above. There's 12 chapters in this book. It's not a long book, and it methodically builds a case that human striving for lasting gain, whether that's through wisdom, through pleasure, through wealth, through legacy, it's ultimately futile due to life's transience and the inevitability of death. And yet it offers hope by reflecting the reader back to God with the fear of God, to embrace life's gifts and to live wisely in life in light of divine judgment. The preacher's argument, it'll often refer to the person speaking as the preacher throughout it, his argument unfolds through a structure of progressive cycles. First of observation, then experimentation, then reflection, and then exhortation. So as you read it, if you're doing Heartstrong, and I highly encourage you to do Heartstrong, as you read it and go through, just think of it going through. He's building a case throughout it. And it blends Proverbs, it blends poetry and narrative elements all together. And as Proverbs invited us to have a fear of the Lord, Ecclesiastes is inviting us to live in God's wonderful world while recognizing that things have gone terribly wrong. In a way, it says to us that we are living in a pretend world if we don't account for what's entered into the world through sin, and that is death. If you try to go through life like death does not exist, you're in a pretend world. Have you ever watched children when they're pretending and they're playing as they pretend? Have you ever watched them do that? They use their imaginations to play, don't they? Their toys take on life. Instead of being inanimate objects, they're cars that can drive and talk and do all sorts of things. They're dolls that can drink tea. They're doing all these things with their imagination. They live out these real life experiences. They have friends. They go shopping or have tea parties. And everything that happens is almost surreal, because when they do all those things, they can buy whatever they want. They can defy the laws of physics. Cars can drive on the road and then drive everywhere and do everything, right? That's the world of your imagination is open to what is impossible for us, right? That's what it looks like. They can have arguments and they can violently smash into each other in those arguments, and yet in the next minute are the best of friends. In real life, in a real store, you just can't buy whatever you want. Credit cards do need to be paid. In a real world, conflict that leads to human suffering, to pain, even physical pain. You can go to the hospital, and the medical community can't always make us feel better. In the real world, making amends is sometimes actually the hardest thing to do, not the easiest, because in the real world, real tears take time to dry. Ecclesiastes isn't going to let us live in a pretend world, and it does this by inviting us to look at life in light of the end. Because if death doesn't inform the way we live, then death is something we pretend doesn't exist. To understand what is most important in life, the preacher asks us to start with the end and work backwards. In David Gibson, a theologian and preacher, he wrote a book on unpacking Ecclesiastes. And he picks up on this, and he uses a very simple illustration that I almost missed out on this morning because I forgot to bring matches, but Ryan saved the day. Not that he had matches himself, but he went and picked them up for me. When we light a match, it's lit just for a second, and it burns just for a second. But even more so, when you light it, when you blow it out, the smoke that's there is there for a second, and it's gone. If you try to grab it, the very action of trying to grab it pushes it farther away. The more you try to grab onto life that is only a vapor, the less you actually can hold on to it. James 4:14 tells us that life is but a vapor. Not only does it dissipate fast, it's impossible to grasp. Ecclesiastes, it starts with something like this. It says, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Depending on your translation, it may say something different. It may say meaningless. Everything is meaningless, or everything is futile. Everything is futility. What they are trying to convey from the original Hebrew word, which is habel, which means vapor or breath. Everything is like breath, there but not really there. Life is fleeting like your breath on a cold morning. You exhale, there it is, but then it's gone. Now, this could be depressing if that's all there was. Life is there, then it disappears right before your eyes. But there is so much more for us. We should not see death as just a destination, but a doorway. And more so because there's more for us even now. To see life have the most meaning, Ecclesiastes invites you to live life backward, embracing that it is a vapor. The days and the seasons, they may in them seem long, but life is actually very short. And so today we're going to take the book's advice and we're going to start at the back and work to the front. Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, the last chapter in verses 13 and 14, it says this, the end of the matter, all has been heard, fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Today, whether you're young or whether you are old, whether we have experienced death closely in our lives or distantly, whether we want to admit it or not, we all will die and we all will face God. And every secret thing, whether good or evil, has been brought between them and God. And only a proper perspective on death can give you a proper perspective on life. Because it's the destination that makes sense of the journey. How else can we make sense of what we go through other than to see it in light of where we're going? Everything just seems unfair, unjust, or unknown to us unless we say, God, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at what you have for me. I'm keeping you in mind, in your face, in my, like we just sang, right? We just need to see Jesus. Give me Jesus. That's all we need. If we keep our eyes on the prize, the finish of our race, then everything that we go through in life can make sense, as it leads us closer to what he has for us. The preacher, he pokes holes in our pretending that there is a destination a destination on earth for us in our lives that we can live for. Whether that's your career, your hobby, the family that you have, no matter what it is, if we look at life like that, that we're living for those things, no matter how good they are, living for those things, gaining those things, it leaves us short of how we're supposed to live. If you think of it, I know when I was a kid, I used to do this. My family would go camping or go do whatever, and as kids, we'd all build sandcastles on the shore, right? And maybe you've seen kids doing that or you've done that yourself, but then the tide comes in, the waves come in. How many times have you seen a kid distraught over their hard work of building the sandcastle only to see waves come in and make it like it never even existed, dashing every carefully built section? You may recall a parable that we've talked about recently that discusses that same principle of building on the sand. Ecclesiastes paints this picture by saying, in the end, there are two types of people. In light of eternal reality, there's two types of people: those who will live life backward and those who choose not to. Again, Ecclesiastes is not a morbid book. It's sobering, but it's also a hope-filled one. Together, now we're going to go back to the beginning of the book and work our way through again. Because after blasting us with his thesis that everything is meaningless, great start, right? Open the book, everything's meaningless, you know, a great start. After he tells us that everything, he tells us how he came to that conclusion. He says in chapter 2, verse 1a, and then verses 10 and 11, he says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. He enjoyed laughter. He enjoyed wine. He enjoyed working and building. If you know what Solomon did in the kingdom of Israel, he established Israel like no other king had before or would again. He built a beautiful empire for the nation of Israel. He enjoyed all these things, nature and possessions, silver and gold, greatness. His name still exists as the smartest person. Pursuing it all, he found that having all those things, it still left him wanting. It was never enough. And then he points to how to see these things in light of eternity, in light of the fact we will die. He says in verse 24 and 26 of the same chapter, he says, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat, drink, and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God, for apart from him, who can eat and who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to the one who pleases God. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. See, it all boils down to perspective. In the pursuit of these things, if it's for itself, then they are an empty vessel. If you're pursuing all those things as boxes to check and goals to achieve, then they are an empty vessel. But if they're seen in light of our time on earth, like we said earlier, it's the destination that makes sense of the journey. They have much richness and joy for us. Ecclesiastes is wisdom to remind us, if life becomes focused only on these things while ignoring the reality of God, it is foolish as you're striving after the wind. When they're those goals we have to achieve, when they're the mile markers for us, they're the vision board and the strategic goals that we create for ourselves, we've fallen prey to chasing after the wind. And you may be sitting there going like, am I not supposed to have goals? Am I not supposed to plan for my future? Am I not supposed to go like, what am I supposed to do? And how am I supposed to build things? How do I make sure I take care of my family or create generational wealth? How do I do all these things? How do I have goals in my life? Am I not supposed to have those things? Am I supposed to abandon them all? Not at all. But if you think that they are going to bring you happiness, they're going to bring you joy, they're going to bring you what you're looking for, then your focus is in the wrong place. How might living backward help us to not be defined as striving after the wind? Experiences and possessions, money, success, if they're viewed only through the lens of possessing them, they can form in our lives a posture of earning. I'm earning something, I'm working for it, and it's a posture of gaining. It's like the rich man who put everything in his storehouse until it was so full. We're looking to accumulate these things. But what do we get to take when we die? Nothing. What kind of life are we living then if we are focused on things we want to possess but we cannot take with us? The one whose life is marked by gain pays no attention to eternal reality. The other whose life may contain gain is marked by a different understanding, that life is a gift. Life is a gift given by God. I don't own my life. I can only steward it. I need not live for performance, but presence. And in this world, it's not my forever home. God is. Therefore, if life is only about gain, you live thinking only about your daily to-dos. But if life is a gift, as you toil and as you work hard, you also reflect on how to honor God with the life that he's given you. David Gibson, in his book, explains it like this. When we accept in a deep way that we are going to die, the reality can stop us expecting too much from the good things that we pursue. We learn to pursue them for what they are in themselves rather than what we need them to be to make us happy. Death reorients us to our limitations as creatures and helps us to see God's good gifts right in front of us all the time, each and every day of our lives. Gain, it's permanence, it's trying to hold on to stuff forever. It's possession, it's earthly stuff, saying, I'm gonna have this and it's gonna be mine and I'm gonna be able to keep it. Gift is presence. It's saying, God is my home. Earth and all the things in it, they're what I use to enjoy and what I use to worship him. It's a divine invitation for us to enjoy life's provisions in relationship to God and others. And so Ecclesiastes invites you to embrace presence, but not permanence. The preacher in Ecclesiastes uses death, not in morbidity, but eternity, to bring all of this into focus for us. He says in verse 13 and 14 of Ecclesiastes chapter 2, he says, then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom and folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yanada perceived that the same event, death, happens to them all. The preacher, throughout the book, he writes in cycles, always arguing from this place, it's all meaningless, and I'll bring it all back to this point. We got to focus on eternity and what really matters. And then he'll go through that cycle again and again and again. In chapter 3, there's a poem about the life, about life in that. And it's a poem that I always thought that was the Beatles had made famous, but it wasn't actually the Beatles. It was the Birds. Close. Birds, Beatles, whatever. But they made the song, the poem famous to those who don't really know scripture and how in living it, there are cycles. There's a time for everything. And if we're open to it, it's a gift. And the poem's written to elicit a response. If life is a gift, then this world is not my forever home. I can go through its various seasons with God's presence, abiding in his love, because his grace is sufficient. But if life is only gain, and my perspective of this world is everything, then I'm going to go through these various seasons gritting my teeth, holding on, trying to only get through it, chasing instead of resting. It says in chapter 3, verses 1 to 8, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. A life of gain sees that poem, sees what is trying to steal the gain. They see the death, the killing, the breaking down, the weeping, the mourning, the losing, the hate and the war. And they see all those things as stealing from all the good things, stealing from the gain and the permanence that they've tried to create. But a life of gift sees that poem and chooses to embrace it all. That life is a gift, and it points us to meaning beyond all that can happen within it. Sometimes, and something that even death can't steal. Death, it means judgment. And that's a good thing. We don't always think of it that way, but it means judgment, and that's a good thing because it brings meaning to what we do. It means that in every season, no matter what happens, how we live matters. Today, if you have found yourself in Camp Gain instead of Camp Gift, I humbly encourage you to shift your focus to the end and to live life backwards. And one way to start doing that is to shift how we think of ourselves, our condition. I'll describe it with a play on words. You are not what you think you are, but what you think you are. It's a head scratcher, isn't it? You're not what you think you are, but what you think you are. You may look at yourself and think, oh, this is what I am. This is how I live. This is what it looks like. I'm living in Camp Gift. I'm all the way in Camp Gift, all the way. I got the t-shirt for it. I'm good to go. But then what do you think? You think, I don't know if I'm going to get through this. I don't know if this season is enough for me. I don't know if God's provision is going to be enough for me. Where are you actually living? You may think you're in this season. This is how I live. This is who I am. But your actions, your thought patterns are like, oh, I'm so worried about this. I'm so distraught about this. This is such a painful thing to have to go through. You're not living in Camp Gift. You're not saying, God, even in this season, this is a gift for me. Your ways and your purposes are beyond me, but I know there's learning, there's understanding, there's gift for me in this season. So how do we think of ourselves? If we aren't really eternally focused, we can go through life focused on self. The question we are asking, and you may not ask it directly, but you ask it in a multitude of ways. You ask the question like this. You say, how am I doing today? Which means we're mostly concerned with me. Am I having a good time? Do people like me? Do I have enough of what I want or need? Am I making enough money? Is my vacation going to be awesome enough? What will make me happy today? We live in that world. And it's a world of gain, and it's a world about me. But because of eternity, because of what matters, because of what Christ has done for us, there's a better question that leads us to living life as a gift. It says in Ecclesiastes 4:4, I saw all toil, that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. We do all those things about what makes me happy because we look around us and we see what other people have, what other people are doing, what other people are presenting to others, and they go like, I want that too. They got the house, they got the car, they got the job, they got the family, they got the whatever. And we may not look at it strictly as envy, but our hearts desire something like that ourselves. We desire the gain that they have achieved. Why we place so much emphasis on gain is due to our perspective of success. What we see others have gained and desire our own version of. But there's a new question that we could ask ourselves. How are we doing? If you can live in this world in such a way that the person or people beside you, your friend, your spouse, your children, your brother, your sister, the people that God puts in your path, they are your waking concern and your dominant focus, then you will find happiness. If your head hits the pillow at night full of questions of how you might be able to serve someone else and how you can be certain and kind of that kind of person for them, you will find a gladness and a contentment like nothing else. And the result of living for we is rest. It's simple if we used other words. Love God, love others. We keep our eyes focused on the prize, who our Father is in heaven, that is redeeming us and bringing us back to Him. And in the meantime, we love others. When we're focused on gain, we may find ourselves in one of two places. And it may seem harsh when I say this, but please hear it in love. We may find ourselves in places of laziness or greed. Laziness means we don't want to expend energy on others. Greed, meaning we want to see, we see what others have and we want a version of it ourselves. What may drive you today? Is it laziness or greed? If it's laziness, then stop and think about serving and loving your neighbor more deeply, because it prevents two extremes. It prevents idle laziness or manic busyness. And it may seem harsh, but it may be worthwhile to think of it this way. Laziness is a way of hating your neighbor, because you have nothing to give them. If it's greed, here's how to sever that root, how to stop the rot in our lives and kill the evil inside of us. Spend your money on others. Give it away. Do it regularly. Do it gladly. Do it generously, and you will be happy. And if these things feel too hard or too much, then I challenge you that gain is your goal. And so I encourage you to do something with what God is highlighting for us today. Something that we as a team at Life Center are leaning into together, and a place that we are responding to the Holy Spirit in us to help grow us is in our prayer lives. The disciples, they asked Jesus, they said, we're asking it today. Lord, teach us to pray. Because when I think about the message of Ecclesiastes, when I evaluate the conflicting desires of gain and gift within me, because I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you with shifting focuses. In 1 minute, I can be like, it's all Jesus. Just give me Jesus. And the next moment, my eyes drop a little bit, and I'm like, and in the future, if I can get to this place. And this is me too that I'm preaching to keep my eyes on him. I know that it starts in prayer. My response starts with Psalm 139. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. The way everlasting is to see life and look and live it backwards, starting with our death that brings us face to face with our Redeemer. To start there and then go, what does it look like for me to end up in that spot? What do I need to do? We can break it down in any other area of our lives. Break it down in any other. I wanna beat Miguel in a golf game. What is it gonna take to do that? Right? What is it gonna take to do that? I'm gonna need to go to the driving range a lot and practice. I'm gonna have to break down the goal of what it looks like to start today to meet that goal. Why don't we just elevate that a little higher? One day I'm gonna stand before Jesus and he's gonna evaluate everything I've done in life. In every season of life, he's gonna go, how did you do with it? Did you see it as the gift that I gave you? I gave you a gift in every season of life. What did you do with the gift that I've given you? I want to work that problem backwards and say, God, today that means accepting the gifts that you have for me. In seasons where there's gain or loss, when things are good or bad, when I feel like death is way too close, or when I feel like I'm on top of the world, I want to see it as gift. I want to see it always as gift, where I can say, wow, this is so amazing because you've gifted me this. Let me honor you, God, with it, keeping my eyes on you, enjoying what you've given me in life. But today, what a better step than to personally grow in prayer, asking God to lead us and guide us so we can see reality as he sees it, so we can see the world as he sees it, as a gift to us, even in its lost and broken state, and keep our eyes focused solely on him. Let's pray. God, would you search our hearts? Would you know us, God? Would you try us and know our thoughts? Would you see if there be any grievous way in us, any gainful ways in us that need to be torn down or replaced with seeing life as a gift and keeping our focus on you? We need you to lead us in the way of eternity. And nothing in this world leads us to eternity. It's only your son, Jesus, that leads us to eternity with you. So we thank you, God, today for the gifts that you have richly given us. We savor the moments that you have for us. In the hard times and the good times, we embrace life as a gift and live it as worship to you. Because at the end of all things, the duty of man is to fear God and to obey his commandments. We want to follow you, God. We want to live in a holy fear of you. And so we invite you, God, to search us. Search us so we can shift from gain to gift. Pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.